Roto-Rooter.
Plumbing problem? No match for a little DIY duct tape. Shoot, hold on. Nope, there we go. No match for a little... Ah, dang it, wait. Duct tape and a wrench. Leaks are no match for duct tape and a wrench. And a bucket and a towel, more duct tape, a hammer, this random tool I found in the basement, another bucket, more tape, a little more tape. Perfect.
Ah! On second thought, maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
And away go troubles down the drain.
Houston Webb splashed off the glove. Take it away.
It's the Hockey Show.
Centered fire, they score.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub. It's streaming on the Sports Hub app.
Welcome into another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show from our Town Fair Tire Studios. Ryan Johnston joined in studio this week by Judd Surratt and Bob Beers. As the Bruins get ready for a matchup with the Arizona Coyotes today and Detroit tomorrow as another back-to-back for this team. Been a lot of those on the schedule. Feels like recently and coming up as well. But good to see you guys. Been a while.
Good to be back.
That's right.
I mean, right now, coming out of this break, Bruins are on a 5-game winning streak. They've won 4 in a row since they had 9 days off. And they've, for the most part, looked awfully good in doing it. And that's the exciting thing about this is, you know, we kind of went through the lulls of this season, but you pointed to that break and said, okay, after that, you got 30-ish games left on the schedule. That's when you feel like they'll start to kick it in. And over the last 4 games, that's exactly what we've seen. They look like, and record-wise are, one of the best teams, if not the best team in the NHL right now.
Well, I think what the coaching staff has talked about and the team has talked about heading out of the break, Ryan, was that they wanted to play to their identity and they wanted to focus. And I know that they've talked about it ad nauseum, that they wanted to focus on the process and that if they were able to execute the way they wanted to and play as a team the way they wanted to, then the results would follow. And I think that that's in large part what we've seen. They have been very stingy, in particular, coming out of the break. They've defended well. The goaltending has been good. They've protected the slot. But it's also been the contributions that you've gotten up and down the lineup from all 4 lines and all 3 sets of D pairs.
Yeah, team defense, right? Harder to play against. 4 lines rolling, all 6 D rolling. Internal competition that we can get into. I think guys just playing to their roles, too. I mean, guys who are supposed to be checkers are checking. I mean, the guys are supposed to be blocking shots are blocking shots. The scorers are scoring, and you're also getting contributions from other people. Power play carried them the first couple of games out of the break. Now it's been more 5-on-5 the last couple of games where the power play hasn't been as effective. So they've found different ways to win. And aside from the Winnipeg game where they did give up a lot of shots in Winnipeg, I mean, we all liked that game, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we all enjoyed that game. And it was a in-your-face, back and forth, you hit our guy, we're going to hit your guy type of thing. And, but aside from that, they've outshot teams. They've limited teams' opportunities. So this has been a real good run. And they've gotten a little bit of they've gotten some breaks. I mean, that offsides call a couple games ago that we've gone back and forth on a couple of times, possession, not possession. Did he touch the puck? Did he not? Argue it whichever way you want. That's a little bit of a break, right? Earlier in the season, we thought that there were some breaks that went against them, right? Some calls that went against them that maybe shouldn't have. The hand pass the other day, it was a hand pass. Did you see what the league came out and said? The league came out and made a statement. Nope, they got it right. This is what the league was saying. It's even if it does touch Mata's stick, after the hand pass, it's not possession.
Okay.
Even if it ticks his stick, it's not possession. You have to have possession. That's what the league said. I'm going by the statement. So, and it was a hand pass.
Yeah.
So, it was, and I didn't hear the whistle. They said they heard it on the bench, but, hard for us to hear from where we were sitting. And But no, they got it right. So they've gotten a couple breaks as well. But they've earned their breaks. They've earned them. They've played well. They weren't going to lose against Vancouver whether they got that break or not. They were the better team by a mile.
Part of the conversation I think we've had for the first two-thirds of the season has been, well, okay, what are the Bruins getting beyond the top line? And not just production, but what type of player are you getting when you're putting David Krejci's line out there, Charlie Coyle's line out there, whatever the fourth line is consisting of? And that's obviously changed here. But Krejci and DeBrusk have certainly had some jump here over the last couple of weeks. Charlie Coyle has been a force once again. It's interesting seeing Sean Corrali. It remains to be seen whether or not he's going to stay there playing on the left side. You've got a reconstituted fourth line there with Anton Bleed and Chris Wagner and Par Lindholm, and they've been steady for you. And they've played at key junctures of the game and provided you good minutes for Bruce Cassidy. And I think that that has also played a role in what we've seen from the Bruins and the surge that they're on.
You mentioned the word stingy, Judd, at the beginning there, you know, talking about the stinginess of this team. The last four games, they've given up 3 goals total.
Yeah, 5 goals in 5 games.
Yeah.
And that goes back,
dating back to before the break.
Against Vegas.
But, I mean, they've outscored, you know, they had the 6-goal burst against Minnesota last weekend, but they've outscored teams 14-3 since the break. And great to see them scoring, but equally great to see that number because both your goaltenders have played well. But defensively, you know, the team just isn't. I think, you know, the game in Chicago the other night, at one point in the third period, they flashed a stat. The scoring chances were 27-10.
Oh, it was
in favor of the Bruins in that game.
Leonard kept Chicago in the game
no doubt.
First period. So, you know, that game should have been broken open in the first period.
Forwards have back-checked hard. They really haven't given many odd man opportunities. I mean, there have been a few here and there in each of those games. If we talk about all the games that they've played across the break, they've handled the puck pretty well. So it's been a pretty sound performance, and it's been closer to 60 minutes than maybe we've seen earlier in the season.
You talked, Bob, about the internal competition, and that's been kind of a theme here, you know, both before and after the break, that we started to hear more of that, and we've seen some guys come up and from Providence and get inserted into the lineup. We saw Sean Corrali, you know, find his way to the ninth floor last weekend in Minnesota, and he's responded well in the last couple of games since then. But, you know, that's something that, you know, the coaches here, I mean, Bruce Cassidy has generally not been shy about using and trying to develop that internal competition and realize that, look, your job isn't safe every night. There's no guarantee you're going to be in the lineup every night. And when you see some of these guys respond positively to that, it's a good sign because it's a reminder to them that you need to be going 100% every single night.
It is a good sign the way that they responded. You know, a couple guys, though, have fallen victim here recently, and I'm curious to see how they respond. And that's John Moore, and he's going to be back in the lineup today with Brandon Carlo missing the game. And the other guy's Danton Heinen. He's been a mainstay in this lineup for a while now, and he was a mainstay on the third line in last year's playoff run. He's been in, you know, on the ninth floor. He's been in the press box for the last few games, and one game was partially because of injury, but the last couple haven't been. And so I'm curious to see which direction now, and whether he gets back in, when he gets back in, and then how he responds, and you know how the team responds too. So you know they've got some choices. Nordstrom's been out. I don't know. His availability, was that revealed yesterday? I know he practiced, but
Bruce Cassidy said, I think it would all depend on how he shows up today. He had something related to allergies and an allergic reaction. Yeah. If everything is okay today, that would be the last hurdle. And then I think that we would see whether or not he would play against Detroit.
Yeah, so you got back-to-back, so you expect to see maybe some different guys in the lineup, in or out of the lineup, based on that. That's what he did last week when they had back-to-back games. He used some different players, so he's got some choices and he's got some options, and as long as guys respond the right way, you know, if you get a guy that sulks and gets back in there and doesn't respond the right way, well, now it kind of backfires a little bit, but now you've got other guys hungry to get in there. So it's worked well so far, and we'll see how it goes when other guys get in there. So John Moore's going to play today. I mean, he's going to have to play his offside, right? He's going to play, it looks like, with Krug, because they're going to keep Lozon and Grizzlick together. So, and then does you know, Nordstrom, Heinen, they've got some other options there too. And do you keep Corrali on the wing? Do you move him back to center? You know, last year they liked him on the wing. Mm-hmm. You know, they thought he could get in there and be more effective on the forecheck by playing wing. He's been good there the last two games, right? I mean,
he's been noticeably good.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
So, My guess is they try to keep him there. But then that creates other questions, right? Does Lindholm stay on the fourth line as the center? And, you know, like I said, does Heinen and Nordstrom get back in there?
617-779-0985, of course, is the number. Let's open up with Maria in Watertown this morning. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning, guys. How are you on this blistery cold day?
Good.
I just wanted to touch on the Danton Heinen situation, and I'm going to preface this by saying I'm not a Danton Heinen fan, but, you know, at this juncture of the season, from a coaching standpoint, I think, you know, you have to look at your core or your group and say, okay, gentlemen, we need everyone who's all in and put the pedal to the metal at this time of the year. And it's ironic to me that in the last two games that Danton Heinen has not played, it seems to me that the lineup that Bruce Cassidy's been able to put out there is getting more scoring opportunities. They've had 82 shots on goal in these last two games. And, you know, I think for guys like Heinen and John Moore, it's time to, you know, bleep or get off the pot at this juncture. You know, you're being sent a message. You're either going to receive the message or, you know, I think it's time to determine who you guys that you're going to go into this deep run with, which I hope is a deep run. Just want to get your thoughts on that, gentlemen. Have a great day.
I appreciate the call, Maria. I mean, we've talked a little bit about, and Heinen, we've talked a lot about, I feel like, this season, as they've tried to find, you know, over the course of his time here, it feels like they just have constantly tinkered and tried to find exactly where he fits here. I mean, there's no doubt that he, you know, has the ability to play at this level. It's just, like, what's the, you know, ultimately the best role for him? And we've seen him up and down the lineup. We've seen him on the left side. We've seen him on the right side. You know, Moore's kind of a different story in that he's a little further along in his career, and, you know, he's getting challenged by a, you know, pretty good amount of depth in this defensive unit that the Bruins have here, and now Lauzon being the latest one. But for Heinen, is it just that? Is it just that they can't seem to find the right fit for him? Or I know they, but it clearly wasn't working recently.
It was alongside Coyle, and it was alongside Johansson, right? That was the third line. And I think he was a healthy scratch at one point in the playoffs last year. But as the playoffs evolved, he was a mainstay on that third line. The year before, it was him, it was Riley Nash, and it was Backes, third line. So I think they have a pretty good idea of where they like him and where they want him. You know, it's, but they have had to move him around for various reasons this year. They've moved him around. You know, the openings on the right side when guys were injured and they were still trying to tinker with that. Now Bjork has kind of moved over to the right side. They've had some confidence there. So I got a pretty good idea where he belongs, and I think they do as well. It's just right now. So Corrali stepped in, and now he's the third line left winger. He's Coyle's left winger. Let's put it that way. I think that's, we can call that the third line. So it always evolves, but, you know, he's been a guy that's been effective in the past. He's been a guy that's had, you know, his dips in play as well. So he's got to find it again.
And let's move back to Corrali, because one of the things that the Bruins were looking for from him is, what did Bruce Cassidy say? We want to pull out a little bit more of his competitive spirit. So they moved him out of the wing, and they've done this at certain times since his tenure has started here with the Bruins. And in some ways, I think Corrali has talked about it in the past, that it helps him sort of snap into gear playing on the left side. But as we look ahead to mid-April, do you want him on the left side or do you want him in the middle anchoring that line, which has been a factor, and it certainly tilted the entire series against the Maple Leafs in the first round last year, and Mike Babcock attested to that afterwards. So I think that that's a question that the team will have to figure out here down the road, is if he starts to play the way that you want him, where do you want him? Do you want him in the middle or do you want him on the wing?
617-779-0985. We can continue with more of your calls coming up. Ty Anderson will join us coming up in about 20 minutes as well as we get started here on this week's edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
This is where Boston talks hockey.
Shoe center fired. Score!
The Hockey Show on your home of the Bruins. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
98.5 The Sports Hub. Ryan Johnston, joined by Judd Surratt and Bob Beers here on this week's Sports Hub Hockey Show. 617-779-0985. We've been talking a little bit about the internal competition for, you know, the Bruins here, especially coming out of the break. We've seen some guys healthy scratched, seen some guys in and out of the lineup, and we talked about Moore, and we talked about Corrali, and we talked about Heinen. How about some of the guys that have filled in those roles? Jeremy Lauzon, for instance, they've seen bleed in the lineup the last couple of games. What are you seeing out of those guys, particularly Lauzon, because he's getting a real good look here lately? What have you thought of his game to this point since his most recent call-up?
I think as long as he keeps it fairly simple, it's been all right. I don't think he's a guy that's going to ever put up a ton of points, but he's shown the ability to get some shots through. He does have the one goal. He's shown the ability to get some shots through, so making some good decisions at the offensive blue line. He's playing the offside. He's playing it with Grizzlick. He wins more battles than he loses, which is why he is in there. You know, one of the reasons why he is in there. You go into the corner with him, you know, he's been coming out with the puck, and it's been noticeable. So, you know, be able to kill penalties, but keep it fairly simple for him. I know that Bruce Cassidy talked about keeping it off his backhand. You know, and you can get into some of those situations. You need to use some of those soft backhands. That was one area that he had pointed out that, you know, they need to make sure that he doesn't have any of those soft plays. So, you know, but you're on your offside. Sometimes that puck's going to end up on your backhand. How do you make that play? You know, or how hard do you make that play? And so, you know, I've been kind of keeping an eye on that, and I think it's been better in that area. So, I think, you know, the logical question, right, is, are they much happier with him than John Moore, or is it something else? And we were talking about it off air, you know, at this time of year, you know, there's a lot of people watching. So you gotta wonder.
Playing for everybody every night.
I think that came up on the show last week, yeah, about the possibility of some of these guys who are, you know, being brought up from Providence, that it might be a showcase,
it's
right?
Possible.
That you know, your teams want to see, okay, like, we've seen what this guy can do at the AHL level. They've got scouts down there all the time, but we want to see this guy in NHL competition, and is he going to be able to plug in on our team right away? So if you're thinking about making a deal, that's something that does happen.
Whether it's that guy or whether you want to see the Bruins want to see if they can play, which makes other people expendable.
Right.
So, you know, there's a couple different ways to look at it. Or maybe it's just as simple as we need an internal competition. You know, and don't read too much into it, which is what they've gone with.
The other guy you brought up was Anton Bleed. He's given the Bruins a spark. He hasn't played a whole lot. He's played about 11 minutes. But the other game that really stands out when we talk about Anton Bleed is the performance that he had in Minnesota. And even Bruce Boudreau had mentioned it. The Bruins are up, what, 4-1, 5-1 late in the game. Anton Bleed is absorbing three straight block shots on a shift. The entire Bruins bench is up to recognize the moment. And in addition to that, he's gotten in on the forecheck.
Killed penalties.
He's given you a little bit of sandpaper. So he's brought a little bit of emotion to the game. So he has given you exactly as advertised, at least to this point. He had a great quote, I think, the other day. He's like, listen, everybody wants to be David Pastrnak. I am not David Pastrnak. So you have to bring what you do to the table and do it on a game-in, game-out basis. And I think he's tried to bring that and that identity, which has got him to the National Hockey League level.
Well, and that's what you hope for when you bring a guy up, is that it just gives you a little bit of extra energy, right? I mean, that guy is going to be hungry. And not that, you know, there aren't a lot of hungry guys on this team, but when you add somebody like that into the lineup, and especially in those first couple of games, they have that extra jolt of energy because they're getting their opportunity and they're going to be going hard every shift.
He's averaged over 10 minutes, right? He's not going to put up a ton of points. He doesn't have a point yet, but he's been around the net a little bit. Had that hand, it was taken back last game against Chicago. But he hasn't taken penalties, so he's played on the edge without taking penalties. You know, so you don't want to put your team shorthanded either. You don't want to make them mindless penalties, right, or unnecessary. You want to play on that edge. You want to get in guys' faces. You want to finish your hits without being in the box. And so far, so good.
And that's the style, I think, that the Bruins were looking for a little bit, at least at this point of the season. Games 40 to 60 are some of the toughest in the NHL. I know that a lot of people around the league like to reference coming out of the All-Star break and the bye. Well, the stretch run has begun. I think that really begins, for me, after the trade deadline, after February 24th. Now you've really got guys who have elevated because you're trying to get yourself into the right spot or in some team's position, seeing if you can get into the playoffs. But we're right at the tail end of the dog days. So yeah. I think you want to try and push your team forward. A guy like that can help you do that.
Yeah, I mean, players over the years always told me the last 20 games is really where that kicks in, right? Somewhere around there is where it really feels like the end is near and we got to get this thing
done. Yeah, light at the end of the tunnel. And then, you know, the other part of it is, okay, you know, standings-wise, hey, Tampa hasn't let their foot off the gas.
Yeah.
They've got the same winning streak that the Bruins have, the same record in the last 10 games that the Bruins have. They're right behind them. They're right behind them. And the Bruins and Tampa have distanced themselves a little bit from the other teams in the division right now. So it's right now it's shaping up as a two-team race. I mean, anything can happen down the stretch if you go into a hole. But it's two teams right now battling it out for that home ice.
Well, March is going to be spectacular. The Bruins have 8 games against the division in March. They have only 3.
2 against Tampa, is that correct?
I believe so.
I believe so, too, yeah. One each.
They only have 3 games against the division this month. You know, we're going to see a couple.
They got to solve Detroit.
Coming up. Yeah. Detroit and Montreal.
Get Detroit 3 more times this year.
And the
Bruins haven't fared well against the Red Wings.
So March is, I mean, it lays out it's going to be some spectacular hockey.
Graham is in Haverhill. You're next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, guys. Hey, huge fan. Bob, actually, watched a pretty interesting documentary on Sean Walsh at UMaine recently. So, huge fan of him. He seems like a legend. But
yes, was.
My call today is actually about getting a little bit more toughness in the lineup. And I think the scouting report is out that if you can take some runs at Pasternak and Bergeron here, and I feel like we're one broken mirror away from these guys just getting hurt. And is there somebody that we can plug in as a fourth line enforcer to really discourage that from some of these other teams? I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah, I think the only game that I look at that I say, you know, the response maybe wasn't quite where it needed to be was Washington. Mm. I think the Winnipeg game was pretty.
They stood up for each other and they did everything that you want.
Exactly. There have been a couple of instances this year I can remember where teams tried to be physical with Pastrnak. I mean, Marchand's going to bring it on himself anyhow. You know, I mean, you know that. So that's always going to be there no matter who you're playing against. Pastrnak, he'll throw his weight around once in a while as well. You know, he'll get in there, but there was a couple games, I can't remember which ones they were, maybe where teams were kind of targeting him a little bit. You know, and do you need a little bit of a response? You know, maybe, but as the game is played right now, I think this team is just fine in that department. Could you use a little bit more? Sure.
Well, you mentioned the Washington game. Chara wasn't on the ice that night.
No,
Wagner
Chara,
wasn't
no
on the
Wagner.
Ice that night. Like it was, it was kind of open season, and the Caps knew it.
Yes, and I think the game dictated that as well. You know, the game got out of hand in terms of the score. The Bruins were blowing them out, and so you had the big hit by Wilson, which was a clean hit, by the way. But he was running around a little bit. Mm. Ovechkin was running around a little bit, you know, using his stick, and then the other guy was Oshie, and he took a pretty big run at McAvoy right in front of the bench. But you know, so maybe that game, but the Bruins were blowing him out as well, you know, and they were missing several players from their lineup that, you know, are known to push back. Let's put it that way.
All right, but
could I use a little bit more? Yes, if it's the right guy, absolutely. I don't know if that guy's in Providence. I think where they are right now, they're pretty happy with their lineup. But if the situation arises at the trade deadline or whatnot that you can add somebody, you know, I know Trent Frederick's name came up, you know, as an internal piece, mm-hmm. somebody that's put up a lot of penalty minutes down there. But I think this team right now is in a good place. But if the situation presents itself at the deadline, there are probably a couple guys out there that, yeah, I wouldn't mind having. You know, you look at – so – I mean, we've talked about it, Judd, right off the air. And, you know, a guy like Tom Wilson, okay, who's your answer for that? Because there aren't many answers in the league for him.
Right.
I think every team would love to have him in the way that he plays as long as he keeps it, you know, doesn't cross that line and what he brings to the table. You know, Zach Cassian is somebody that's been brought up in Edmonton. Not as good as Tom Wilson, but somebody that can play that role, right? I look at Josh Anderson last year. He's had so many. He's had injuries this year, and he's had a down year. Mm-hmm. But he's a name that's been mentioned. He's 6'3", 6'4", 220-something, and can fly. How's the shoulder injury? Where is he at with that? He's only got one goal this year in the games that he did play. But he was 27 goal scorer last year. You know, so if he's somebody like that becomes available, yeah, I'm listening. Because he's a guy that dropped the gloves with Chara a couple years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, is he as effective as Wilson? I don't know. You know, I don't know him well enough. But what I saw in the playoffs last year, I liked what I saw in the playoffs.
Yeah, that is a name that you've seen popping up a little bit more and more as, you know, a guy who may be available. He's, you know, kind of getting lumped in with Kreider and Toffoli and some of those other guys
right
that might
shot,
be might be
body,
targeted.
But he's had a terrible year. I mean, he's got one goal this season when he's been healthy, and he's been out with a shoulder injury for a while now. And I don't think he's back. I don't know if he played last night, but he was getting close to being back, but he hasn't been back yet.
What is Jarmo Kekäläinen going to do with Columbus, who is by far the biggest surprise in the National Hockey League, considering all
Elvis.
The names that left? Another shutout last night. He's got five here on the season. They've got 30 wins, and they're only 8 points behind the Washington Capitals in the division, 2 points behind the Pittsburgh Penguins. I understand the Penguins have a couple of games in hand. But what does Kekäläinen want to do? And if you are going to move a guy like Josh Anderson, what does your team need in order to get itself forward? I think in talking with some of the Blue Jackets people, they're not going to find a game breaker like Artemi Panarin, but they need some high-end skill. Can Josh Anderson fetch that?
617-779-0985. If you would like to join us, we'll continue here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show and talk with Ty Anderson coming up.
Miss something?
This is a black and gold freight train.
Catch the Hockey Show podcast at 98.5thesportshub.com and the Sports Hub app.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show continues. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers, joined now here in the Town Fair Tire Studios by Ty Anderson and 98.5thesportshub.com. Morning.
What's up?
Little internal competition. That's what we're talking about this morning.
Every place needs it, right?
Really does. It helps. Keep everybody on their toes. We were in talking about that, talking about John Moore being out of the lineup and Danton Heinen being out of the lineup and, you know, some of these guys that are getting in there. I think you and I talked about this a little bit on the show in the last week or two about, you know, are they showcasing guys? Are they showcasing guys internally? Are they showcasing guys for other teams, whatever? What does your gut tell you about what we've seen out of that kind of internal competition here in the last week or so?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think Lauzon's at the point where you kind of need to see what he can do at the NHL level, right? I mean, he's been around for a little while now, and I think if you're having a guy play his offside, you want to. I think you just want to see him compete. And you guys talked about it earlier. He's been competing, I think, in all these games. I think that he's been a better fit on the offside than Moore has to date. Obviously, you want to see a greater sample size, but I think that he's passed. So, if they were showcasing him now, I'm kind of saying I don't know if I want to do that as much, just based on how he's looked versus how Moore has looked when he's playing the right side this year. But up front, they like Bleed, it seems. It seems like they talk about him quite a bit before he was playing, that they want to see what he can do. And in that fourth line role, there's a lot of flux. I think that we've talked about this before. That line hasn't looked like how we thought it would, given how they played last year. So you bring in that guy and you see what he can do. And I think he's been passing, too, in the sense that he's not really – everyone kind of said when he was coming up, he's an agitator. He's going to get under your skin. He's going to do that. But he's not crossing the line, right? He's playing an effective brand of hockey right now, and I think they're going to take that.
I mean, from the perspective of, you know, as you said, for Lauzon, you think, well, maybe, you know, maybe this, if you are showcasing him, this wouldn't be the guy. But, you know, as we talked about, there's some money to be saved potentially by moving John Moore if you go in that route. Again, we don't know
any trade
kind of what direction they're looking at, but they need
to
save money somewhere. Yeah.
I mean, somehow, some way, you know, if they get creative, I don't know. I mean, you still have Backus's contract. They need to free up.
And trading Lauzon doesn't save you anything.
No, exactly. And that's where we circle back to two of the guys that have been scratched lately, and Heinen and Moore. They're both affordable contracts for a team if you're looking to pick them up. And Heinen's under contract for a couple more seasons, so you have that sort of, you know, he's still young, he's valuable, we can all agree. It's just where is his fit here? And if you add to this team, theoretically you have two spots for three players between Kuhlman, Bjork, and Heinen. So how does that all shake out? Well, two of those guys are very affordable right now. So maybe the $2.8 million guy is out the door.
You wrote about Charlie McAvoy this week. McAvoy gets the overtime game winner, kind of gets that monkey off his back, and which was good to see. But tell us your perspective on the season that McAvoy has had to this point, because so much of the focus of late, it feels like, has been, you know, he doesn't have a goal yet. Well, now he does. But that does not tell the story.
Yeah, I think that's sort of... I've seen a lot of people say that he's had a bad season, or he hasn't taken the step that they want him to take. Well, okay, well, forget goals. Let's pretend that doesn't exist right now. Are you happy with how he's played? Because I think you should be. I think in the defensive zone, I think he's been good for them. And I just think, yeah, you want the goals, but I don't look at that as the sole determining factor of if he's playing well or not. I think that he's been going against other teams' best players all night, and he's had some great showings, I think. So he eats minutes. You look at it, he's playing physical. He's absorbing physicality as well, and he's not ending up in the press box with a concussion or, you know, injured for whatever reason. So I've liked his game a lot this year, and I really have it. So, yeah, you want to see more offense, but I don't know. I think that in a shutdown role, I think he's doing his job along with Brandon Carlo. That right side for them, I think, has been phenomenal this year, that 1-2 punch they have there.
Yeah, both of those guys early in the year struggled a little bit. Maybe it was the contract, you know, you get the new contract, you want to justify it. I don't know. I can't put myself in their shoes, but it sure looked like they were a little bit in between. Carlo, especially, he struggled a little bit at the beginning of the season. But as the season has gone on, absolutely, they've been outstanding here. I mean, Carlo's been really good in his role and what he does, whether it be the penalty killing and the shutdown and just solidifying and being him and Krug complementing each other in that way. Carlo's been very good. And aside from the goals, yeah, McAvoy's been good too. You know, you like him to get build a little bit more into that, into his game, a little bit more confidence, but that can go south in a hurry when you're in between. When do I shoot? When do I pass? And, am I trying to force shots to get through, or should I just make that smart play and put the puck down behind the net in the offensive end? And then the next time I get it, maybe I can get that puck through. But don't try to force it where it gets blocked and they're going the other way. So, you can find yourself in between a lot. And when the confidence isn't there, then that can build and build. And now you're, you know, whatever point of the season, 50-something games in, and you finally get your first goal. But the rest of his game, the other parts of his game, yeah, they've been good.
Love the response that he had on Mark Scheifele coming out of the break. So, but that all was precipitated by some hits that Chara both took and gave with Patrick Laine and Scheifele in the near corner. It was just below us in the first period. So then Charlie comes over and lowers the boom on Scheifele, and it's game on. And you love that type of response. Charlie is such an instinctive player that I think maybe prior to the break, as Bob alluded to, he was a little bit in between. The decisions weren't quite as spot on. The instincts have been there for him here in the last few games, and he has elevated his play. I think that's the other thing that you love about him. When the stakes go up in the game and the temperature rises in the game, McAvoy rises with it.
Yeah, that's what I like about him a lot, really, is that I just feel that he has a great pulse for the game, and he just, to your point, yeah, when the moments are big, I want him out there. I really do, because I feel like he's gonna make the right decision, it seems, more often than not. For a player who's only 22 years old, you know, that's you want those guys. That's a good sign for the future. I look at that and say that's a positive more than I look at the one goal in 55 games.
Well, and look, we know that is there, right? I mean, we've seen over the course of his first 2 years, I mean, he's, you know, across an 82-game average, he's only played, you know, 63, 52, 54 games. But over an 82-game season, like, he's a 10-goal guy from the back end. As a rookie and a second-year player in this league, I feel like the one goal this year is a blip on the radar. Like, that's going to be there for him, whether it's there right now or not. I feel like he's going to continue to grow into that part of the game.
And do you almost feel now that now he has the one, they're going to come a little bit more now? It's just to get that one off your back, and here you go.
He'll end up with a few more. I don't doubt that at all. But we already talked about it. For me as well, it's just his overall game. That's all I want to see. I mean, it's going to weigh on his mind, you know, not having a couple, you know, to look at in that goal category. But it's still his overall game has been very good.
And that's what guys like Patrice Bergeron are trying to convince him of. He's still only 22 years old. And when you're a young player, especially having that goose egg and without a goal for such a long period of time, as mature as he is,
he'll be better for it.
It's still going to eat at you. And I think what the team was trying to tell him and guys like Bergeron were trying to tell him is don't worry about that. That's going to happen. You just play the way you've been playing. The goals will eventually come, and it did.
All right. Trade deadline inches ever closer. Names keep floating out there. Kreider seems to be a prime candidate to move, but now there's reports that the Rangers are going to try and maybe lock him up and get him extended before the trade deadline.
That could also be, by the way, to try and drive up the price.
Could be. Never trust anybody. You know, never trust anybody in the weeks leading up to the trade deadline. Toffoli's another name that's been out there for a while. We were talking about Josh Anderson earlier. That name, you know, has started to get floated out there as a possibility. Rank those guys and throw in any of your own that you might want to put in on that list as well.
The thing about Josh Anderson is, which one am I paying for? Am I paying for the one right. that has one goal and four
points?
Well, there's
a red flag there, right? Because of his shoulder injury and the slow start to the season after getting 27 goals last year.
Exactly.
He had one less goal than Kreider last year.
And I loved what you saw from him last year in the playoffs. He was bodying people, and I was like, this guy is a monster. If that series went to a game seven, I was a little nervous because of him. Like, he's the kind of guy that can flip a game on its head. So, yeah,
McAvoy's hit on him too in the second period of game six.
Yeah,
that was. Oh. I mean, and now knocked him out for the game.
Exactly, and that was a heavy. I mean, that was that was just humanity colliding.
Well, no, he actually came back. I take that back. He came back, didn't he? He did. He finished that game.
Let's go one further, though, with a guy like Josh Anderson. How much does his contract status weigh on the way that he is playing? This is a guy who has a past history of holding out for a little bit more money as a restricted free agent. Does that factor into anything that's going on in the way he's either playing right now or the way other teams view him, whether or not they want to acquire him?
Yeah, there's some red flags just in terms of, you know, who are you getting? Exactly. But 27 goals last year, and that's building on a 17 and a 19 goal season. You know, we've seen him drop the gloves with Char. We've seen him throw his weight around. He can fly. There's a lot to like there.
Oh, absolutely.
There's a lot to like there.
It almost feels like because of the performance he had against the Bruins last year in the playoffs that you're talking about, like that might make them lust after him even that much more.
One goal this year.
Yeah.
He only played 26 games, but one goal and the shoulder injury. So there's cause for concern there, too.
And you're talking about where the Blue Jackets are right now, too. So they would probably want more of a hockey trade. They wouldn't want, we'll take picks and prospects. No, they'd probably want something that can help them right now. So what is that? How do you determine what that is? And that's the other part of it. So,
well, you got to make the money work, though, too.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah, which is it's Moore and it's Heinen. It's one of those guys. So you got to sell them on that and more.
He makes less than $2 million right now, Anderson does.
Yeah, and then he's due for this year. He's an RFA with arbitration rights, so he could get paid. And that's to Judd's point that the contract status, right, is he doesn't have a long-term deal with them. Why? What is he asking? What does his camp want? And are the Blue Jackets, if they're not willing to do it, they should get something for him. But what is that price, and can the Bruins afford it given everything else they have to pay this summer as well? So I like him a lot. It's just a matter of which guy are you paying for, because that changes how you rank them. So personally, I don't really feel like the Kreider move makes a ton of sense for them, getting another left-shot winger who's going to command big money in the offseason. I like him, but they want a package similar to the one they got for Kevin Hayes. Or they want a better package. I don't really know if I want to do that if I'm the Bruins right now. I don't think that Kreider is that guy that you want to do that and then pay him $7 million a year for. I just don't see that.
How about Toffoli?
I like him because I think he's more cost-effective. I think with Toffoli, you're probably talking about a second-round pick and a prospect, and I think that makes sense for them. And he's had a better year. I don't think that he's – when I watch the Kings, I don't notice him every night, but I think that he could be a stabilizing presence on your second or third line. I think that makes sense for them. But Anderson, yes, once his name is out there, that's the tantalizing one. That's the one you want to know more about.
It's a risk-reward scenario. It really does feel like he's the most risk because you don't know what you're getting exactly, but he's also the potential, the biggest return. and a guy who I think makes the most impact if you're going to try and win a Stanley Cup.
And the answer is a long-term need, right? Everyone says, you got to get that next guy. You got to get the next power forward. All right, well, that guy looks like he could be that, you know, he could be that player for you. It's just, again, it's just making the money work both now and in the future.
There's no truth to the Kovalchuk idea, though, right?
There can't be. There can't
for those
be.
Who missed it, I mean, this has come up in the last couple of days. Report out of Sportsnet in Canada that the Bruins have interest in Kovalchuk, which, of course, they'd have to make a deal with Montreal when they weren't willing to take him when they could have just signed him for the minimum for nothing.
Yeah, and that's why I don't believe it at all. I just don't think that this wouldn't be Lee Stempniak all over again, right? You have him in skating with your guys, and then you trade for him like 5 months later.
When's the last time those two franchises initiated a trade, especially at the trade deadline?
So did they have a three-way trade?
I might have an answer for you on that one.
Did they get Jeff Hackett?
Patrick Traverse.
Oh, Patrick Traverse. The D-man.
I don't know if that's the last time, but I'm pretty sure he came from Montreal.
It's pretty
or maybe
rare
he went to Montreal.
To see certain franchises, especially the ones that have a lot of history between the Bruins and the Canadiens, to make a deal. But times have changed.
It might be a fever dream, and I'm misremembering this, but I thought that they had Jeff Hackett, the goaltender, and I thought that he was in Montreal pads in a Boston uniform. And I was like, this is the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life. But I think that was a three-way trade. I don't think he came here directly from Montreal, so to speak. So I'd have to go back and look. But yeah, it doesn't happen very often. I mean, for the longest time, right, the Rangers and Bruins didn't trade, right? It felt like that was a thing for a while, and now they made three trades in the same year. So, but no, I don't see them doing that because, again, you could have had him for nothing. Now you're going to trade assets. I think Sweeney's kind of above that now at this point in his GMing career.
Anybody else out there that you would covet in that position?
Not forward-wise. I think defenseman-wise, I wouldn't mind Brendan Dillon if the price is right. I like him.
He's a left
like
shot, him. Though.
I know, that's the thing. I wonder if he could translate on the right. I haven't seen enough of him to know if he could do that or not. That's a guy who, that might be your Miller replacement. You know, if Miller's not coming back, I mean, that's not a bad option to have in there as a seventh or eighth guy.
But, is that a luxury that they can afford?
That's the other thing.
Right. I mean, again, we're talking about, you know, the potential of these deals, and they're going to have to clear space to make any sort of a deal. You know, if you want to beef up what's already a pretty good defensive, you know, defensive unit, it feels like that might be a little too high on the wish list.
Yeah, and so that's the other part of that. Kind of throws that out the window. I mean, unless the Sharks are eating money, which why would they? You know, Dillon's going to have a market if they move him, so they don't need to do that. So I don't, you know, looking at San Jose, it won't happen, but it's always fun to think about Joe Thornton, right? If he moves, bring him back for one final run. Let's just see if it gets beyond the first round this time.
He's cheap. Right.
He's cheap. It would never happen. I think that's me being like, you know, the old 8-year-old Bruin fan of me. It's like, oh, I want to see him back. I don't think it's ever going to happen.
I know we still get a couple of weeks before we get there, but I mean, this is like, they have to do something, right? I mean, I think the expectations are, you know, are going to be sky high for this team, given where they're at in the standings right now, given what they did last year. I just feel like they have to do something.
Yeah, and I think they will. I mean, they have every year under Sweeney. They've always made a move, whether it's a smaller one like Drew Stafford or a big one like Rick Nash and Charlie Coyle last year. I think that they're going to do something. I think they've positioned themselves to do something. I mean, look at the way they've managed the daily cap this year, right? They send guys up and down just to create the most space. They got to do something.
So, you know, we talk about the window, right? Guys starting to age a little bit. They put themselves right now. They are the number one team in the NHL, points wise. Okay, they're in a position. Is this team, as it's constituted right now, good enough to win? That's the question. All right, and if it's not, then you owe it to them to try to do something somehow, some way. But you're gonna have to get creative in order to do it. The money's just not there, and because of all the injuries they've had this year, that cap's even tighter. You know, they've tried to manage it all season long, whether you're sending guys down and calling them back up. Actually, do they actually go down, or is it just a day on paper? But if they feel that this team, and maybe this is part of the reason that they're trying to get a look at some of these guys to see, are we good enough to win right now with the team we have? There's no guarantees. right? There's no guarantees. You run up against a hot goaltender or a hot team playing the right way. And look at Tampa last year in the playoffs. You know, you're just they ran into Columbus and they didn't have any answers for them. They had an injury to Hedman and Hedman wasn't right coming back and they didn't have an answer for them. So there's no guarantees, but are they in a position right now where they think that this team as constituted can win?
There's no reason not to think that, right? I mean, look, there's no question.
Improve?
You can definitely improve.
Then they owe it to them.
But this team is close enough to what it was last year, and we saw what they did, what they could do last year. So, I mean, there's no reason to think that you don't have another run like that in you, but a little boost wouldn't hurt.
And that's where I land on it, because I think last year a lot of things went your way in terms of matchups. That might not happen this year. You might have to go through Tampa. You might have to go through Washington. And do you believe in what you've seen from Bjork and Kuhlman and Bleed and Lozon to believe that they're enough in a 7-game series? And if the answer is no, then yes, you have to do something. And I think that ultimately they are going to do something, because they look at this roster and they probably want a little more pop. They have to look at it and say, there's got to be a little bit more here.
Yeah, and I think the question is, okay, is that going to be someone on the right side up front or someone on the right side on your D?
What's Kevin Miller's status?
Yeah. He's skating again. I mean, he's on his own. We'll see. It's just, until he's on the ice in uniform in the starting lineup,
He's a bit of a game changer on the back end, but what are you going to get from him?
Yeah.
It's a long time to be off and a tough, tough injury to come back from. What are you going to get? Are you going to get the same guy?
I mean, who knows?
The effort's going to be there, but are you going to get the same guy?
This feels like uncharted territory too, right? In terms of the injury. Guys coming back from something like this.
Well, what's the line when it comes to the playoffs? You can never have enough defensemen. Guys are going to get banged up. So maybe...
Yeah, we've seen that over the years here.
Back that up on the right side. Let's play out the hypothetical and he somehow does come back here before the end of the regular season. Do you still back it up with someone who can play on the right side if you have an injury to someone on one of those top three D pairs?
I just don't want to see Tommy Cross in a game six lineup ever again. That's all I need. So if you get another defenseman, go for it. If it makes sense price-wise. It's about covering all the bases here, right? And I think that up front they look pretty good. On the back end, it can get a little scary. If they have one more injury, now you're really reaching into Providence. And is Vaakanainen ready? I don't know. I think he could probably use some more seasoning in the AHL before he's up here again.
All right, Ty Anderson, you can read him on 98.5thesportshub.com. He joins us each week. Thank you for the time, as always.
Anytime.
We'll have another hour of the Sports Hub Hockey Show coming up. Your call, 617-779-0985.
This is important.
Visit the store at 98.5thesportshub.com to purchase your Sports Hub gear. Special designer Toucher and Rich, Zoe and Bertrand, Felger and Max, and Adam Jones shirts. Plus limited edition 10th anniversary wear in the Sports Hub store at 98.5thesportshub.com.
.5 the Sports Hub and the second hour of this week's Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers here with you in the Town Fair Tire Studios. 617-779-0985 for your calls in this hour as well. As we'll talk with Billy Jaffe coming up in about a half hour, go around the NHL with him, all of what's going on around the league, preview today's 3 o'clock game against the Arizona Coyotes as well. In addition to that, of course, Bruins are on the road tomorrow playing in Detroit, 12:30 start. And also should mention that it's like the old AHL days for Bob Beers, 3-3 coming back for the Monday night as the two of us are going to be calling the Beanpot Championship game over at the Garden here on the Sports Hub as well. So, looking forward to that. Always a great event. So, Bob putting in a little bit of extra time with us this week.
That's all right. Enjoying that.
It's good. It's a good take. It really is. And you know,
enjoy that game.
It's a great time. The atmosphere is always tremendous. And Northeastern BU should be a pretty good matchup on Monday night too.
Going for three straight.
Yes.
I had a couple four and threes when I was doing the announcing and playing for Providence.
Four games in 3 days?
Yeah. You play Friday, Friday night for Providence, play, work a Saturday afternoon game for the Bruins, play Saturday night for Providence, and play Sunday.
That Sunday was always a 4 o'clock game, oh, too, yeah. I'm sure. So like, those were the best. It was funny. I tweeted last night about one of my AHL experiences because there was a video of going around of Bruce Boudreaux just losing his mind on the Wild bench last night, and he was our coach my first year up in Lowell, and I saw that side of Bruce a few times, including one particular game when a day later he was still in that mood for our pregame interview. 9 minutes we went, two questions I asked. And he spent the entire time just feeding the officials.
What's his nickname?
Gabby.
That's exactly yes. Right. Doesn't take him long to get the furnace face going anyway.
No, definitely not. All right, 617-779-0985. The Bruins, as they are on a five-game winning streak, again, four in a row coming out of the break. We've been talking a lot about some of the internal competition on this team as guys have been shuffled in and out of the lineup and some of the guys being brought up from Providence. What hasn't changed really all season long is, for the most part, is that the goaltending on this team has been terrific. And when Tuukka went down prior to the break, he gets knocked in the head. They called it a concussion. He sat out for the remainder before the break, and then he comes back. And since he's come back from the break, when we've seen him, I mean, he's been terrific. We talked about how good this team has been defensively, but you always wonder when a guy especially deals with something like that, how is it going to affect him? Is he going to be the same guy, especially after a long layoff? And he's been awesome.
Yeah, he has, and under control. I mean, the game, so he's played two games since the break, am I right?
Yeah.
So the game against Winnipeg, he was excellent. And had to be. And that was his first game back. He had to be good. And he got some help from the post a little bit, but that's okay. Line A was around the net all game. Winnipeg had some good chances to score in that one. So, and Winnipeg, they threw a lot at Rask, and he was really good in that game. The game against Vancouver, that's his shutout. He was good. Didn't have to be great.
Right.
Didn't have to be great. That team played really well in front of him. He made a couple of saves when he needed to. And was in control all game. And he talked about it after the game. It was the best 60-minute game, best defensive checking game that he thinks he's seen his team play all year. So, he was right. But he was good when he needed to be in that one. Team played really well in front of him. He had to be really good against Winnipeg.
I haven't checked the stats here today, but yesterday, leading the league in goals against average among the goaltenders that qualify in that category. Not the guys who played like three or four games, but leading the league in goals against, leading the league in save percentage. Is he in the Vezina conversation again? And is it harder because he hasn't obviously seen as many games as he normally would because of the type of goaltending and the type of role that you've asked for from a guy like Yaroslav Halak? Who's been solid as well coming out of the break.
I mean, 30 games at this point for Tuukka. I mean, it's the perfect pace, right? I mean, Halak has been, as Tuukka gets, kind of gets the admiration and gets the attention, but, Halak's got 25 starts, 14-6-6. His goals against is a 2.36. Like, he's having a pretty good year. And that even included a little bit of a dip for a while where he wasn't quite the same guy, it seemed like, for a few weeks in there. But he's been, overall, exactly, for the second year in a row, exactly what they need him to be.
Your number two goaltender could end up with 20 wins again,
yeah.
Correct? And that doesn't happen all that often. It's been a big strength for this team here for the last couple of years, that the way that they've been able to manage him, Rask, and the way they've been able to manage that position. And you've had the upper hand against some teams who haven't done the same way. See, Toronto... And because of that, you've been able to advance in the playoffs because of the way you've managed that position.
You mentioned, kind of the idea of, should he be in the Vezina talk when he's only played 30 games? And it's like, I understand why people would view it that way around the league when you have guys who are going to start 65 games or 70 games. But from the team perspective, and you're looking to win a Stanley Cup and you're looking to keep him fresh, like, This is their plan. This is exactly what they map out at the start of the year, and it's worked to perfection to this point, to the tune of the best record in the league.
Yeah, in comparison right now, just looking at it, Rask has 30 games played. Vasilevsky has 40. You know, and Vasilevsky's been on a tear. Mm-hmm. He hasn't lost in regulation in, what, 17 games or something like that? Some crazy number. Only two overtime losses. So he's been on a tear, but 40 games started, or 40 games played for Vasilevsky. And I know that Freddie Anderson's got to be in that run as well, numbers-wise.
42.
42 games, okay. And he's hurt right now. So this, it worked last year. They're hoping for the same thing this year in terms of having them sharp when the playoffs start. And it's a good plan as long as you got the backup to do it.
Well, and to just transfer that point to Tampa, they wanted to upgrade their backup position. Louis Domingue had a pretty good year for them last year, but they still went out and they signed Curtis McElhinney to try and give Vasilevsky a little bit more time off. But it became problematic because of the start that Tampa Bay had this year. So now you're forced to play your number one guy a little bit more.
Well, and that's, we've seen that happen here with Tuukka before too, whether it's because the backup wasn't playing well enough or because the team, struggled out of the gate, that you're just trying to either make the playoffs or you're playing for playoff position all the way down the stretch. And you have to ride the guy in the second half of the season because you need those points. You need every point that you can get.
And that's why it's so critical to get off to that big start. In the small scale, it's okay. How are we utilizing certain guys, whether it's my goalie or I'm playing my top end guys a little bit more because I have to get myself into the playoffs. Toronto's in that. They're in that mess right now. They're in it right now. The amount of time that they're going to have to play guys, because there is a batch of teams that are right around the mid 60s.
Toronto's tied with Florida right now in points, but Florida has two games in hand, and that's for the last, basically the last playoff spot, unless you're trying to, and then there's the wild card stuff as well, where Carolina's got the same amount of points. But, Toronto with 55 games played, 65 points, and then Florida at 64 points, but 53 games played.
And so Philly's got 65
points.
Yeah,
you got Philly, you got Carolina, mm-hmm. You got the Islanders all in that same boat, and maybe Columbus if they lose a couple.
So you're going to have to push.
Columbus is 2 points behind Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh has two games in hand, but.
I mean, Torts has got to be in the conversation for coach of the year right now, right?
Sure.
No doubt about that.
And Elvis for something.
Right.
I don't know if it's rookie of the year, if it's for Vezina. I don't know if he's going to have enough games played, but he's got 5 shutouts.
Crazy. That is crazy. Let's go to Chris in Marlboro. You're next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning.
Hey, what's up, dudes? Hey, so, the third line, it's always an issue every year. They got to always get someone at the deadline, Let's finally do it. They did it last year. It was good. Unfortunately, you know what happened there. But, let's get some for the third line there. Let's get it going. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, we've been talking about the, those guys and the mix and match nature of that and trying to, find exactly the right combination. And that's going to be something that, as we look at the stretch run too. And granted, a lot of that will probably revolve around what they do or don't accomplish at the trade deadline. But, doing a little bit more tinkering and Bruce Cassidy playing with that a little bit more and figuring out, okay, what is the best, what are the best line combinations before you get to the postseason?
I like Coyle as the third line center.
I do too.
Start with that.
Yeah.
I know that they've, put him up on wing a few times and see how that looks. And when they brought in Studnicka for a couple of games and, you use some other guys in that position. Use Corrali there for a couple of games. Try and putting Coyle up on the wing. I like him as a third line center. I think, and when you call it third line, it's just a matchup thing, because you watch guys try to knock him off the puck. It ain't happening more often than not. He's holding on to it. He's creating offense by doing that. And could you try to coax a little more offense out of him? Sure, you'd love to see that. But at the same time, he's last year in the playoffs. 9 goals, and that was that third line. But that was the addition of Coyle and Johansson. Heinen was on the left.
And what they're asking from him right
now.
So
you don't have a Johansson, so where's that line sit?
Defer less. Drive more. You can be a little bit selfish. If the shot's there, you got to be able to take it. But I think Charlie here over the last couple of weeks has elevated his game. And it's not just the puck control, but it's the way that he has taken pucks between the dots toward the front of the net to create that havoc and create some second opportunities. That's made a difference. He He's the guy who crashes at the front of the net to allow Corrali a little bit of seam to sneak one by Robin Leonard. Whether or not you think the goal was any good, it comes from a good spot from Sean Corrali because of the work that Charlie Coyle does out in front.
617-779-0985. We can get to more of your calls coming up as we continue here on hour number two of the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, what's up, dudes?
Shoots and left, flashed up the glove, take it away.
It's the Hockey Show.
Centered, fired, they score!
On 98.5, the Sports Hub, and streaming on the Sports Hub app.
.985 The Sports Hub. Brian Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers here with you. 617-779-0985 for you to join us on this Sports Hub Hockey Show. We'll talk with Billy Jaffe coming up in about 15 minutes about some things going on around the league, including the Arizona Coyotes, who are in here today for a 3 o'clock matchup against the Bruins over at the Garden. These guys, of course, will have the call of that, starting with the pregame coverage at 2:30. Guys, this week, Bruce Cassidy, hit his third anniversary as head coach of the Boston Bruins. Pretty amazing when you look at the success that he has had just from the record perspective, 150 wins, 62 losses, 34 overtime losses since he arrived here, with the Bruins is pretty fascinating. I mean, again, you think of where this kind of organization was when they moved on from Claude Julien and he took over the job, and what they have accomplished since going to a Stanley Cup final in a great position again. And you guys being around the team a lot, he just seems to, you know, have a lot of respect from the guys in the room. He seems to push the right buttons when they need to be pushed. We were talking earlier about the internal competition on this squad and, you know, trying to get the most out of these guys. And I feel like, you know, all of the lineup changes that he makes and the tinkering and whatnot, they always seem to come out, well, not always, but they seem to come out on the right end more often than not. It's just he seems to have a knack for exactly what this team needs when they need it.
I'll throw in the whole staff, and you know, it's not going to just be one person. You know, he's going to be the guy ultimately, you know, answering right out in front of the microphones. But it's a staff that works hard. It's a staff that works well together. You know, as a player, I think most players, if you ask them, want to know where they stand, and they want honesty. It's a little different now than maybe when I played, but, you know, in terms of the partnership between player and coach, so you've got to be able to work with them. You might not like what you hear, but at least you know where you stand. And I think that guys know that, and I think that there's an open dialogue with players and the coaching staff about those. And, you know, it's not all going to be roses. I mean, these guys sitting out can't be that happy, but at the same time, they need to know where they stand, and then when they get back in, are they going to get an opportunity? You know, I think Bruce Cassidy said something the other day. Look, it's a good thing they, you know, Sean Corrali or whoever responds when they get back in, because if they don't, and, you know, coach
what,
has no bullets left in the gun, right? Yeah. So they have responded well, and I think that the dialogue is open, and the communication is open. And you can go right up, you know, to Donnie Sweeney, and he has a good working relationship with Bruce Cassidy and the staff. So it all has to come together that way. And like you said, you're going to go through 82 games. You're going to go through a long season and playoffs, hopefully, and it's not always going to go smooth, and you're not always going to agree on things. You're going to disagree on a lot of things, but at the same time, you're trying to get the most out of them, and that message has to be fresh. It can't go stale. And I think the one real important thing that the Bruins have, one of the most important things that the Bruins have, their leaders buy into their coaching staff. And if you have that, then the younger guys usually follow. And if they don't, hey, we're going to make some changes. You know, you're not going to be here. And they have over the years.
And that's the first thing that he'll usually credit is the type of leadership that he has in the room with guys like Chara and Bergeron and everybody in that first tier of core leadership and everybody on that secondary tier of core leadership. And the Bruins certainly have that. But to highlight Bob's point, it's how he delivers the message, not just the fact that he's honest, but it's the way that he communicates his points, whether it's the guys out of the lineup or the guys that he's shuffling around the lineup, that I think resonates. And it certainly resonates in the media. I think it certainly does nationally. That's why people have such a favorable opinion of the head coach of the Boston Bruins, because it's the way he communicates, and that takes place in the room. He's genuine. He's authentic. You know, and I think a lot of guys that are in that room, they can see through it if he's not. And I think beyond that, I think it's his ability. I think he makes some great in-game adjustments. Some guys are a little bit more stable with their changes, but I think he understands the changes that need to be made. I think he also understands who's going and who's not, and that's important. So he has a good temperature of what's going on in each particular game. And in addition to that, over the years, he's translated the Bruins team into much more of an attack mode group, and players like to play that style.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, when he took over the job, it was, you know, you saw that transition from, you know, more of a stay-at-home, like, you know, we're going to take our time moving the puck up the ice. It was evident right away when he took over that this is going to be something different than we're used to, and now we've kind of become accustomed to it. Look, there's no doubt. I mean, he's got an immensely talented team to work with. I mean, he's got some of the, you know, literally some of the best players in the game, but you take a look around the league, that does not always translate. You know, there are teams that have a lot of talent that don't put those wins together necessarily year in and year out. And the consistency that his team has had really from day one when he took over is what's most impressive to me is that, you know, we talk about these little dips in the season, but overall, I mean, you know, 50 games and 49 wins, and, you know, they're on pace again to, you know, potentially be the, you know, a top team in the league. And, like, that consistency is really difficult to come by in this league, because even if you have the talent, you're not always going to get the most out of your team from night in and night out. So, I mean, it was a great move at the time. It has turned out, you know, over the course of the last, you know, few years to pay off huge dividends, and you know, he gets the recognition that he deserves for it. But it's nice, you know, at his 3-year anniversary to recognize, like, just how good this guy really has been at this job. 617-779-0985. All right, so there's a game coming up this afternoon against Arizona. Brandon Carlo is not going to be in the lineup today because he's dealing with a personal issue. We've talked a little bit about the lineup defensively, and John Moore in particular, and Lozon and the aspect of that. What is taking Carlo out of the lineup? Because we've talked about him a lot this year and how good he's been. How much of an impact does that have today? We don't know what the status is going forward.
He's supposed to be there tomorrow.
It is.
It's
okay.
A family matter, apparently.
Yeah. Right. I didn't know if it was going to be the whole weekend.
He's supposed to be there tomorrow. That was the word that was given yesterday by Bruce Cassidy. We'll see if that rings true or something changes. But, yeah, he's supposed to be back in there tomorrow. So, short term, miss one game. One good thing about playing Arizona, they don't score a whole lot. Arizona, they struggle to score a little bit. I mean, I their numbers are – Clayton Keller's numbers are baffling, especially recently. I'm just looking at their last – I mean, he's had trouble putting the puck in there. He had no shots on goal against Carolina in their last game.
Did you catch Rick Tocchet's comments?
I did not. Phil Kessel, one shot on goal.
Well, this is a team that's lost 6 of 7. So the Bruins have played a lot of these teams here in the last – certainly coming out of the bye. Western Conference team desperately trying to get into the playoff chase, whether it's Minnesota or Chicago or Vancouver. Even though they're at the top of the Pacific Division, they're by no means secure in a playoff position. No, just the quotes from Rick Tocchet after they lost 5-3 to Carolina. We just did dumb things. That's what upsets me and the staff. It's just stupidity. what's going on with the team? So Taylor Hall has not been a cure-all for whatever has ailed an Arizona team that has had a hard time scoring. It certainly hasn't helped that they've been missing their number one guy, Darcy Kuemper, who is close to returning. But they've got to somehow figure it out.
They're missing their top defenseman as well.
Oliver Ekman-Larsson is hurt. They've been a little bit banged up on the back end, and I think that that in the bigger picture has been an issue for the Arizona Coyotes this year.
We will talk with Billy Jaffe. We'll talk a little bit more about that matchup today, as well as some of the other teams around the division and the league coming up next as we move into the final half hour of this week's Sports Hub Hockey Show.
We've got Boston sports covered, coming and going. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. Final half hour of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Chud Surratt, Bob Beers here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. And each week at this time, we welcome in Billy Jaffe of Nesson. Joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline to go around the NHL. Good morning, Billy.
Good morning, Ryan. Hi, guys. How's everybody doing today?
Everybody's good. Everybody's ready for a little 3 o'clock hockey today.
For the life of me, I can't figure out why the hell we're starting at 3. Not 1, not 5, not 7, 3 o'clock. I don't know. Anybody know?
I'm sure all the Arizona fans are awake and ready to watch the game.
That's a good point.
1 o'clock Eastern would be too early.
The pools will be warm enough by then, Beersy. They'll be ready to sit outside and watch.
We were talking a couple of minutes before the break about the Arizona Coyotes, who come in here not exactly tearing things up. They lost 6 of their last 7. Things are going south for them. They're falling out into a potential of a wild card spot right now. What's going on with the Coyotes, and how hungry should they be today?
Well, they better be really hungry. I heard you guys and Judd talking about that, and Rick Tocchet didn't hold back after last game, basically, you know, saying the team's not tough and he understands it. That's got to kill Rick Tocchet, one of the toughest sons of a gun ever of his generation to play the game, honest, fair, you know, brutally, you know, wonderfully tough out in the ice. And he knows that the game has changed, but his team isn't tough at all. And he says, all right, that's fine, but you still got to battle. And I'm paraphrasing, as Judd talked about. He basically called them soft, and they are right now. The heartbeat of a couple of their players, I think it was Beersy that mentioned Keller. And I know you guys talked about Taylor Hall. And we talked about this about a month ago. I think we talked about if we thought they'd make the playoffs or not. And I still wasn't convinced that they would. They don't have a lot of drive. You know who's got drive for them is Connor Garland, the Scituate kid. He plays his ass off. He gets himself to the front. He's scoring. He's doing all the things. This is a team that better be really hungry right now. They've lost their last 5 games on the road. Only one in the last win in the last 7, as you mentioned, guys. Their goaltending without Kemper is struggling. Rant has been better as he's come back in. He made a highlight reel save, one of those scorpion saves a couple of games ago. But overall, they're injured a little bit. But even when they had Ekman-Larsson in the lineup, they didn't have enough drive. And it's got to be concerning to Tocchet, and it's got to be concerning. I would think that John Chayka, the young wonder, you know, GM, wonder kid GM, this team that he's been putting together. I mean, we haven't even mentioned Phil Kessel. Is he scored in forever? I didn't look yet on his numbers, but he's hardly scored at all for them.
Well, I was gonna ask you about him because I mean, he's got 16 5-on-5 points in 56 games this year. Like he's 31 points overall, and he's a -22.
Well, if it weren't for the Red Wings, he'd be atop the leaderboard. He'd be the favorite for the green jacket. The other guy is Derek Stepan. He's your number one center. He's got 22 points.
Well. Is he really? I mean, I guess he is if he's with Cat. I don't.
Would be the number one center on that team?
Why are you yelling at me? You do this all the time. You yell at me on this show. I mean, maybe Dvorak. I'm not. I'm just saying they don't really have a true number one. So I'm agreeing with you. But Stepan hasn't been great, Judd. At least he's more responsible defensively, and I think he gives you a more of a rounded effort. I think. It's an inconsistent team. There's no doubt about it. I think they all looked at the Hall trade and it would catapult them to, another level. The problem is he's a winger. Not that you can't have impact on the wing. We see that with the Bruins, but you need guys down the middle to make plays for them. And between Kessel and Hall being meh, I see that Kessel's got two goals since the new year began, and both came in the same game. So listen, though, we say it all the time, and you know, you got to respect everybody, right? I mean, if the Coyotes aren't, they're coming on this road trip, if they're not chomping at the bit to get after it and play tough, they're going to be in real trouble making the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the, for the Bruins side of it, right? They've built up some good momentum coming off the break, or even going into the break, but certainly coming off the break. They've got the four wins in a row. They played the game the right way. You've got two games now. You've got a team that's hurting, beat up a bit, not playing well. They're coming into your building. The Bruins have only lost twice in regulation this year. But you got this game, and then you got a team that's, for whatever reason, has had your number over the last couple of seasons. That's Detroit tomorrow. And it's a quick turnaround of that game. And Detroit can't beat anybody right now. They won the other day against Buffalo. But, I mean, they're struggling against everybody. And
that's another great dumpster fire.
But you haven't been able to beat them yet.
I know.
I played them once this year, but still, I mean, that you got two games that you, if there's ever a time where, you know, there's been criticism earlier in the year, maybe you play down to your opponent sometimes, this has that kind of making. So they've got to continue that momentum and continue to play the game the right way.
I don't want to jump ahead, but that top line for Detroit has always been, I mean, they have been gamers when they've seen the Bruins.
Tuzi, Larkin and
Mantha.
Mantha. Yep.
They have been really good, and the goaltending has been really good, whether it's been Bernier or usually it's Jimmy Howard. But the other thing that stands out for me, just looking at this Arizona team, they've got a lot of skill, but who is their core and what is their leadership?
Well, that's been their problem. They named Ekman Larson their captain, was it 2 years ago now? And I like Ekman Larson, but, you know, to say that I think, I mean, I know he wants to be there. He signed a nice contract to stay there. Well, who wouldn't? Well, it's like Florida years and years and years ago. I'll never forget this. Jacques Martin, remember? Yeah, obviously, Jacques, you guys all remember. He was signing guys, the three, four guys to these, you know, Steven Weiss and some others to these 4, 5, 6 year deals for a lot of money. He says, well, these are the players that want to be here. I would say, who the hell doesn't want to play down in Florida? No state income tax. And you're making all this money and no pressure. To me, it's similar to Arizona. I mean, who wouldn't want to be there and thrive and, you know, make gobs of money and play hockey where sometimes you don't have more than one person asking you questions in the media. It's great. But on the other hand, I agree with you. I mean, to me, their leadership is, I guess, Richardson. I mean, he's the type of guy, I think. You got Nick Jarmelson, Judd, you know him well, but whether he's vocal or not, that's the guys that I would look to be my leaders. Because the other guys, you know, some of their winger, and Derek Stepan, in fairness, I think Derek is a good leader for them. But otherwise, their identity is that of just kind of this, analytically speaking, this is a real statistically driven team. And I just think you're seeing that it doesn't always play out that way. Analytics are great in certain places, but it doesn't mean you're going to get everything you need to be a dynamite team.
I know, you know, it was important with the, you know, now that the ownership situation out there got settled and all that, they really wanted to, you know, make a push and be a playoff team. And that's part of the reason for bringing in Kessel and obviously the Taylor Hall trade. Do they have it in them to pull out of this skid and make sure that they're still a playoff team? Because they're in the midst of this, you know, this division mess where you can go from first place to out of the playoffs in about three games.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they have it in them because the division does stink. I mean, it's not good. It's not a great division. I mean, to me, Vancouver the other night, Markstrom was outstanding. He really was impressive to me. I'm assuming, you know, Bob and Judd, you guys would agree with that. His performance, it kept him in. It could have been more than 4-0, obviously. To me, it's still Vegas' division. I got to think Vegas will trade for a D. I got to. I can't imagine Kelly McCrimmon not making a move. After that, it's, you know, I'd like to think Vancouver will find a way to get in, just given some of their higher end talent. I do think, you know, the Hugheses, and I mean, I like that team. I'm not ready to say I love them yet in Van, but after that, Calgary's been unimpressive to me. They have some issues. Edmonton, both these teams, those Edmonton and Calgary have struggled to find their footing since the whole Battle of Alberta thing. They've both, you know, been gotten their butts kicked at times. And by the way, Calgary's coach, Jeff Ward, former Bruin assistant, calling out his team after last game for not having leadership come through for him. So, but if you look at the rest of that Pacific and you're like, who else is there? I mean, we know that LA, San Jose, and Anaheim are all done. So, yeah, I think Arizona can squeak in. I still don't think that, you know, it's by no means a lock, but if they get some goaltending and they get somebody to do some scoring for them, Ryan, they can squeak in.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the Atlantic Division here. The Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, they made a trade.
Yeah. What did you think?
Second year in a row that Kyle Dubas makes the early trade. Remember who they got last year? Jake Muzzin. Remember where he came from? L.A. Has a familiar sound or ring to it. Is you know, here that he goes out and gets Jack Campbell, a backup goaltender, and then Kyle Clifford, the fourth line grinder. He's one of the few, would you guys agree, few old school type players left. Not afraid, obviously, to drop the gloves at all. I think if I counted correctly, by the way, Kyle Clifford in his NHL career, I had 90, I may be off by one or two, 90 fights. That's more than the entire Toronto Maple Leafs have had since the 15-16 season. I mean, that's just, you know what I mean? It's unbelievable. With under Babcock, just like when he was head coach at Detroit, they didn't fight at all. So is he going there to fight? No. Is he going there to provide presence? Sure. Does that mean fighting? If it happens, it happens. Look, it's no secret. I think it was Judd that was saying that the Leafs put themselves in this position with their goaltending. Their backup goaltending, led by Michael Hutchinson, I should say led by, but he was the main guy, stunk. It was inefficient, understatement. So they had to go get somebody. They go out and get this kid, former first-round pick from the, I think it was the 2010 season when Campbell was a first-round pick. He's predominantly played with the L.A. Kings. He had a little bit of a run with Dallas, but L.A. is where he's gotten his most games played. I'm curious to see how he does. He may start again tonight. He played last night. They hung on for a 5-4 win over Anaheim. They gave up a late goal, and then they won in overtime up in Toronto. But you want to talk about being thrown right into the fire. You're going from L.A. to Toronto, last place to first, or not first place, last place into a playoff race. But you go from less media to the most media coverage there is in the National Hockey League. So I'm curious to see how Jack Campbell does. I give them credit, though, in Toronto for going. They knew they had to address this, fellas, and they did.
Gave them credit. They took a flyer on Michael Neuvirth at the beginning of the season in training camp. That failed miserably. But watching some of the highlights from last night, Jack Campbell has solved all of the Maple Leafs' defensive ills.
Yeah, well, they still aren't good back there, but at least they got they had to do something to get another goalie in there, and they at least did that. I'm not saying it's going to lead them into the playoffs. They still don't know how to hold on to a lead. Great. I mean, Austin Matthews is scoring a ton. Mitch Marner scoring a ton. Tavares is putting up points, but to defend, you know, I was talking about this. I was at the NHL Network for the last couple of days, and I was talking with Scott Stevens and Dave Reed about it. And Reed sees them an awful lot in particular, but they just say, you know, they're trying to do this system where they're basically making these short passes to get out of the zone, and that they just felt that, you know, while they have some energy under Sheldon Keefe, the fact is they still don't know how to defend the cycle well at all. So come playoff series, and we've talked about this, Judd and Bob, numerously, you know, during the last 2 years in the playoffs, hammer away, especially at the right side defense of the Toronto Maple Leafs, cycle away on them and force them to have to turn and play in their own zone. That's where they become the least effective, I would say, part of their team.
Well, yeah, we were talking
about keeping Riley, Morgan Riley, on the long-term IR right up until the end of the season. That sounds a little bit like the old Chicago Blackhawks with Patrick Kane, right?
Yeah.
So you free up his salary and bring somebody in.
But even the bigger difference, because we were talking about this before the show, Kane got injured at the end of February. It was a busted collarbone. This is Morgan Riley who, broke a foot on January 14th. How long? Originally, the Leafs said that was going to be 8 weeks.
Yep, exactly.
I mean, that's usually like a 4 to 6 week injury. 8 weeks would even be pushing it.
So you wouldn't have your number one defenseman for the rest of the regular season if you choose to do that.
To make the playoffs,
if you're going to circumvent the cap too.
Well, yeah, and I mean, listen, they've got a lot of issues on their back end too. And we've discussed this. Who are they going to keep? Who are they not going to? All of them except Riley are unsigned, basically. I mean, the Hull kid might be a RFA, but, you know, he'll be back there. But
he re-signed, I believe.
He did re-sign.
He did. Okay, sorry. So point is they still got a lot of questions back there, too. They're going to have to make some more moves if they can't. I agree with Bob, though. It's a huge risk, even though Riley is not what you would call a defensive zone stalwart. He is their best defensive. He's had some good games over his career against the Bees. I think that'd be a huge risk if they do end up keeping him out as long as possible. This team, to me, as I watch them, again, I missed last night. I saw a little bit on the plane. I was waiting to take off just to get home. I missed all the game. I watched the highlights. They still don't defend well in front of their own net. That's an understatement.
We were talking earlier, you know, when Ty was on about some of the potential trade pieces that the Bruins might be after, and the names out there are Kreider and Toffoli, and now Josh Anderson's name has started to pop up in some circles as well. We were talking about him earlier, and Columbus is on such a run here. You know, they're just rolling through everybody, and they're, you know, closing in on Pittsburgh for second place in the division. A, would they be interested in making a deal like that? B, you know, the question that all of us had is, like, which Josh Anderson would you be getting?
Well, and how much does the injury impact the type of player that he is or needs to be? The other question, I don't know if you guys would think this is even a valid question or not. Does Columbus want to trade with the Bruins? I mean, I guess it all depends on, you know, being in the Eastern Conference, and they could play each other in theory in the first round. You know, we still have a lot of hockey left to play. Depending on where Columbus finishes right now, they're in third in their division, but that we know that could all change. Would you want to end up playing each other? And, you know, you've made a deal to help each other. I don't know. I can't answer that. I like Josh Anderson when he plays the right way. I heard you guys talking about it as well. Which guy are you going to get? Again, the question comes down, how much of the injury impacted? What is he going to want? I think that there's got to be, I'm guessing that Jarmo Kekalainen has some idea what it's going to take to sign him, or at least I'm assuming he started his due diligence. Wouldn't you guys agree on that? And that will impact how much they want to keep him or how much they're going to look to potentially move him. The other question is not that you don't need a player like that. Of course you do. But if you're John Tortorella and you say, hey, this lineup with the speed and whatever, this is great. Does he become a role player for them instead of a regular player for him? All those things. I don't know. I mean, listen, Chris Kreider, the agent, I believe it's Matt Cater, he was down there talking with Jeff Gorton yesterday to see, you know, I think to start talking about a deal, not to hammer one out. I think it was just a, hey, what do you want? Hey, what do we want to do type of thing. You know, if Kreider wants 7 years, 8 years, I don't see the Rangers doing that deal. If he wants 5 years and they're willing to bump up the AAV, I see the Rangers seriously considering that. But from what I was told, yesterday's meeting was just about kind of the let's have the initial, what are you looking for? What are we looking for? And let's see where we go from there.
Yeah, I mean, you see the possibility of him re-signing. I mean, he's been one of the top names, not just for the Bruins, but just seems to be one of the top names that's been tossed around the league about somebody who might be on the move before the deadline. If he comes off the list, that would be I mean, I guess I ask you, like, what kind of fit do you think he would be here if the Bruins could make that work?
I think he'd be a good fit. I do. I think he'd be absolutely jacked to come home, play here. He's a Boxford native. I shouldn't assume, but, you know, played college, played prep school at Phillips, Andover, played for college at BC. I think he'd be absolutely stoked to come back to here. Ton of family in the area. I think he could handle it for now. I think that his type of play, he's huge, you know, lower body. His skating is his greatest asset. He will go to the front of the net. Sometimes does it a little recklessly earlier in his career. Has had some confrontations with netminders, so to speak, you know, in his career. He's more of a left than a right winger. He can play the left. I don't know, Bob and Judd, what you guys think, but you know, to me, if they could work it out and the deal is fair, I'm okay him being more of a left winger and it's keeping Bjork on the right side. You know, I mean, it's to me, if the player, if you can fit it in and make it work without being too much of a give back, you know, a fair trade, I think he'd fit in well with the Bruins.
Well, I certainly think a first-round pick would have to be exchanged. And just looking at the Bruins' picks here for the next, I want to say, 3 years, Don Sweeney has all three, rounds 1, 2, and 3. He has all of those in his deck of cards that he can deal out if he chooses to make a trade.
Yeah, look, first rounders are usually always, we assume that. I mean, what if it was somebody more, maybe it's one or two players off your lineup that you feel that you can handle. Maybe it's one of your prospects and a player off your roster now that you feel that you've got repetitive kind of nature, abilities. You have to do a first round pick if it's one of your better guys from Providence. Maybe that's too much for the Bruins to give up if Donnie doesn't want to give up a first round pick. But in one form or another, you're going to be giving up a first rounder, whether it's one of your top prospects or it's a pending first round pick.
Who you got in the bean pot on Monday, Billy?
Well, I guess Northeastern. I didn't think Northeastern played great on Monday, this past Monday. I didn't think that their passing from their D to their forwards was great for a while, and some of their big guys, in particular, a guy like Tyler Madden, didn't play great. They still found a way to win. There's no question that BU's got a ton of skill. They don't always play with the most structure. I'm curious how the youngster Abel will handle the big stage. He was good in game one. Meanwhile, both of them lost last night. Yeah. BU loses to Merrimack and Northeastern lost. How could I forget that, Beersy? Jeez, I mean, shame on me. I'm sorry. Maine's been great at home this year, Beersy. Holy smokes! I think they're 10-0-2. It is an awesome place to play. It is awesome. But I think they're 10-0-2. Maine could win Hockey East this year, fellas. Not to go on a tangent. Anyways, if Northeastern ends up picking it up and getting better, I think, transition or better outlets from D to forwards and some of their big guys get going up front, their top line, I think they've got the advantage. But meanwhile, BU was outplayed for 53 minutes of the game, basically, against BC. BC was the much better team. And what did that mean? It meant nothing. It meant they had a lead until, 3-1 for a while, and then they lost. What a fun end of the game that was.
No question. Appreciate the time, as always, Billy. Enjoy the weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. See you later. See you guys. See you at the game.
There's Billy Jaffe joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. All right, so today, 2:30 pregame, 3 o'clock faceoff for these guys, Bruins and Arizona. Tomorrow, noon pregame, 12:30 faceoff out in Detroit. And then Monday night, Bob and I will be on the Beanpot, 7:30 for the BU and Northeastern championship round of the Beanpot Monday night here on the Sports Hub as well. We'll talk to you next week here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Roto-Rooter.
Plumbing problem? No match for a little DIY duct tape. Shoot, hold on. Nope. There we go. No match for a little... dang it, wait. Duct tape and a wrench. Leaks are no match for duct tape than a wrench. And a bucket and a towel, more duct tape, a hammer, this random tool I found in the basement, another bucket, more tape, a little more tape. Perfect.
On second thought, maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
And away go troubles down the drain.